Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the OFCCP Compliance Podcast here at Local Job Network. I'm your host, Tim Yuma, and on the OFCCP Compliance Podcast, we look to get into some details on certain topics within the OFCCP landscape and some of its related areas. Just looking to give you a little more insight into what's going on in this world in particular. Now, with me once again, so that I'm not here talking by myself in our studio, as usual, we have the founder and president of HR Analytical Services, Bill Ostendorf, remotely, of course. Bill is not in the office with me, but we'll find out where he is right now. Bill, how are things going with you?
Tim, things are great. It is very good to hear from you again. I'm always disturbed that we can't be together, hang out, you know, do the usual, after podcast party that we would typically do. But, you know, someday those things will happen again, and it will be a spectacular event.
I'm thinking we should probably keep that post-podcast party thing on the down low now that you've expressed that to the thousands of people that are listening to this episode right now.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
all right.
We're going to have to invite them.
I'm in favor of that, Tim. You know, our three listeners would probably enjoy, you know, getting together with us after the podcast. So let's just figure out where that will be. And you're buying, aren't you? Isn't that what you said last time we talked about this? Okay, good.
You said your mom was very interested in meeting me still, and you know, I'd like that opportunity. So.
Yeah, she finds you much more interesting than me when we do these podcasts. So I think that she'll want to be the first one on board. So this has so much potential, Tim. I can't even tell you.
Well, we will open it up to as many people as they want to join this this little maybe happy hour, virtual happy hour. I know that's been a popular thing amongst people. So I say we set that up. We'll set that up for everybody who's listening. And if it's three people, if it's 3 million, yeah, we'll make it work one way or the other.
It'll be fantastic. Okay. Anyway, so we have important things to talk about today.
We do.
Oh, where should we start, Tim?
This is rare, by the way. Bill is the one trying to keep us on track versus me trying to keep us on track. Well, actually, there was, though. You're right. There is some very big news that has come out recently, and it is going to have an impact on, as you mentioned in us talking about it briefly, impacting all employers, but of course also federal contractors. And that's what we tend to focus on here, of course, with the OFCCP Compliance Podcast. And that is the Supreme Court ruling that came out in favor of Gerald Bostock. And basically looking at that, the court ruling in his favor, 6-3, finding that workplace discrimination based on an individual's sexual orientation or gender identity is prohibited by Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So that's the sort of legal breakdown of it. But I guess in looking at this bill, what does it mean, just generally speaking, as far as like why they would have come to this decision and why this is a big deal when it comes to both employers in general and the federal contractor community?
So there's a lot in this decision that's really important for all employers and especially important for federal contractors and subcontractors. And I actually want to start to even, you know, move back from this and look at the big picture from the week of June 15th, because there were two major rulings that actually came out from the court. One of them is this Bostock decision that we're going to focus on today. The other one came out several days later, and that was the DACA decision that came out from the court, where the court said that the DACA program that had come into place in the Obama administration and the Trump folks had said, you know, we need to get rid of this. It was something that was going to have to stay in place for the foreseeable future until they made some changes administratively to their approach. The tie between those two things is they were both a surprise. As far as I was concerned, I think a lot of people were concerned, you know, I think some of the expectation here was that in each case that the court was going to rule the other way. So when both these decisions came down, it was very interesting to see both the rationale that the court had and the final votes on these cases. The DACA decision, by the way, does have some impact on employers and on federal contractors and subcontractors in the sense that it secures the place that Hispanic employees have where there's some question about if DACA disappeared, you know, whether they were going to be employable, because
right,
there was this whole question about, you know, was there going to be additional deportations of those folks or what was going to happen. So, you know, what we had there was another case that sort of links back to the question, how do we make our workforces a more diverse place if the DACA recipients were going to suddenly be out of the workforce That was going to be a more difficult thing, and it was going to pose some problems for employers. The bigger one, obviously, for our purposes today is this decision in Bostock versus Clayton County. And this was a decision that, as far as I was concerned, was a huge surprise. And it was surprising because there would have been a very easy way for the Supreme Court to have ruled the opposite way on this.
Right.
You, Tim, I think you follow this enough that you know that over the last 20 years or so, Congress has had a lot of opportunities and has taken up the issue a number of times about whether sexual orientation and gender identity were explicitly covered in Title VII. And Congress has never passed a law. They've never gotten a law through both branches of Congress, signed by the president, to say, yes, those two things are covered in Title VII. So it would have been very easy for the court to look at that and say, hey, if Congress doesn't think this was covered, we don't think it's covered either. And so that was the direction that I think a lot of people assumed this decision was heading. Well, that's not the way it went at all. And it was, so interesting to see that this wasn't just a 5-4 decision with Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts joining the four liberals on the court. The person who wrote this decision was actually Neil Gorsuch, one of the new Trump appointees, who has been a very reliable vote on the conservative side. And Justice Gorsuch here brought some of his traditional approaches to how he decides cases to this particular case. But there's also some odd things in the way he approached it. And so let's answer that question. Why did this case get decided the way it did?
Right.
I think there's really two things that are going on here. One of them is that several years ago, the Supreme Court had said in a very critical decision that there is a right for same-sex couples to marry. And that case, which has a guy whose name is almost unpronounceable, Mr. Ober, I don't know, man. Every once in a while, I just stumble over that one like crazy. So Obergefell, I think that's correct.
Obergefell. Yeah, Obergefell. I think you got
Okay,
that.
good. All right, good. We're getting there. But in that case, there was the court finding a constitutional right for same-sex couples to marry. Well, if you think about it, if the court had then come out and said, in this case, Bostock, that you can marry, but companies have a right to discriminate against you in employment, there'd be a real logical sort of inconsistency there.
For sure.
And I think that affected how people on the court thought about this.
Okay.
I think that when they looked at this, they sort of said, we're going to produce an awful weird decision here that's going to cause an awful lot of chaos if we're saying on the one hand you can marry and on the other hand you can't work. So as much as that was not an issue touched on in the decision per se, those kind of things do affect members of the court. Here's something else that hasn't gotten talked about a lot, however, that I think was a piece to this decision. All of the cases that were consolidated into this decision in Bostock versus Clayton County, there was actually three cases, and they were all about termination. And the court tends to look at termination cases in a very different way than other kind of employment cases.
Right.
Because when you have a termination case, what do you have? You have someone who's already got some interest in that job, who already has some kind of direct connection to the position. And what you're doing in essence is you're taking away something very tangible from that employee. So it's not like those cases where we're looking at, an applicant who might or might not get employed or something else where there's a more, nebulous connection between the individual and the employment benefit. Here, in a termination case, in any termination case, what you have is you have an employee. They've been part of a company. They're losing everything that they have associated with that company. And so courts tend to want to very much jump into termination cases and say, you can't do that in situations where there is a reason to prevent that. So that's something I don't think is getting enough attention, and I think is certainly part of this.
Sure.
Let's go through just for a minute, by the way. what's involved in this Bostock case, because it actually isn't just one case. There are three different cases that are involved in this decision. Two of those cases involved employees who were terminated because of their sexual orientation. And then the third case involved an employee who was going through a gender transition, and she was terminated because of that. And so in this situation, you know, there was something very explicit going on where these people were all terminated because of those statuses, because of sexual orientation, because of transgender status. And so the court had a very straightforward decision. It wasn't like, you know, it was unclear what the issue was. The issue was really clear. You know, the court basically just had to say, under Title VII, are these things where Title VII prohibits discrimination or not? And the court came down very clearly saying that in terms of termination, you cannot terminate people based on sexual orientation or on transgender status. So that was something that the court made very clear in these particular decisions. I think it's interesting, you know, the decision that Justice Gorsuch wrote, he certainly focused very much on this whole termination aspect of these cases. He did talk to some extent about hiring, about how this decision might affect applicants for positions and people being hired into jobs. And that obviously is something that's very important to employers in terms of how they look at things. If this was only about termination, you know, we might be talking about this in a very different context. If they had said, you know, there is a right to make sure that there's no discrimination based on sexual orientation involving termination, but in other places we're not sure, we would have a very different set of circumstances than where Gorsuch here in his decision talked about applicants and hires. I think, you know, that while Gorsuch didn't get into other types of employee settings, other types of employee benefits, so he didn't really talk about training or promotion or anything like that. We can pretty much expect that this decision does apply to the whole realm of employment decisions that are covered under Title VII. I don't see any way to get around that. You know, if Gorsuch has talked here about termination and about applying for positions and hiring, it doesn't look like, you know, we're going to be able to say, oh, but there are other things that are not covered here. It seems really clear that this applies to everything under Title VII.
Yeah, I think you'd be 100% right on that. There's no way, even relating it, as you said, to the gay marriage side of it, allow you to be married, but it's still going to affect you as far as working. I think same thing like you said here. I mean, whether or not you have the job already or you are looking to get that position, it would seem that it's all encompassing. And you know, there might have to be more legal fights and specifications when it comes to that. But I think in this decision and just the way it was written, and I think the way it's been communicated in general, as far as the employment realm from start to finish.
Yeah, and to pick up on what you just said there, it's an interesting decision to read because it's actually, I think, going to have ramifications for things throughout the employment realm and, frankly, in all kinds of other areas. The way this decision was written, Gorsuch was very clear that he was looking at the strict language of the statute, and that when Congress had said you can't discriminate against people based on sex, that the term sex in this context absolutely involved anything involving sexual orientation or transgender status, that those were unquestionably covered just because of the language. Well, there are lots of statutes that, you know, have prohibitions against discrimination based on sex. And it's not just these employment ones. It's some of the other things that are involving education or involving things going on in the military or other places. So this is really a far-reaching decision. You know, it has a lot of ramifications for employment, but it has a lot of ramifications for other aspects of society as well. So big, yeah, this was big news and should have been treated as big news. And for anyone who read this and said, well, this isn't a surprise and it doesn't really do a lot in terms of, you know, moving the needle forward, I would tell you, I think it really does, because this is a very explicit acknowledgement by the court that these two things are covered, and they're going to apply to all kinds of different aspects of life.
Thankfully, in many ways, the United States has moved forward in a number of areas. Obviously, there's work to be done, but anytime you get it legally stamped, for lack of a better term, that just makes a big difference to your point, because it clears up at least some of the gray area. And there are a number of state laws that do lay it out more specifically that would fall in line with what Gorsuch has done here, at least as far as obviously his role in it. But to make it that federal side and have that approval, I think that, as you said, it's a much bigger victory than I think a lot of people maybe understand. And hopefully, just with our conversations and more stuff that's going to come out in the future, that'll be laid out for everyone. I want to quickly ask though about how this impacts specifically the OFCCP realm, and even with OFCCP reviews, the audit process, and any other areas that you see this impacting immediately or in the future, and how we have these conversations when it comes to sexual orientation, gender identity. I know you and I have. We did a webinar talking about, how it's a challenge, especially the deeper you get into it. But where do you think this, I guess, falls into play when it comes to OFCCP and its reviews and what they're looking at?
So, I think there's a couple things that are important here. And one of them is something really foundational, which is that there has been some real question over time about whether the executive order that amended Executive Order 11246, that included sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes. There were always some people that said, well, we're not sure that that's actually legal, because we're not sure that those statuses are covered by Title VII, and thus we're not sure that the president can include those as statuses that federal contractors and subcontractors have to respect. Well, Bostock, makes it very clear that the changes to Executive Order 11246 to include those statuses is in fact legal. That those can be made part of what federal contractors need to do. So there's no longer an issue here. It's not an open question in some kind of way. The other thing is, I think it just means some practical things, which it means that there are possibilities that OCCP may now do more inquiries into what are employers doing to make sure there's no discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity. And OACCP is going to be even less reluctant to look into questions that surface during reviews or to take complaints based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And for contractors and subcontractors, there's a couple simple takeaways, one of which is that there needs to be some training done for managers to make sure they understand
For sure.
that it's not just OACCP anymore saying this. This is, the Supreme Court has made it clear that these are statuses that are protected, and that there has to be a real concerted effort to avoid discriminating on these bases. And so we'll have to do a variety of things here to make sure that there's, to make sure that there's a variety of things to. That there's a variety of things that are done in terms of policies and procedures and things that people put in place to watch out for individuals based on their sexual orientation, gender identity. Anyway, I think this is it reaffirms in some ways what OCCP has done,
Sure, yeah.
but it also gives new emphasis to this. And of course, here's the other interesting part of this. I mean, while federal contractors and subcontractors have had to do this for a while, they've had to be concerned about this for a while. It now basically says that every employer covered by Title VII also has to be concerned and watch out for these two statuses. And so that makes things simpler. I think, it's not suddenly just this carve out where it's federal contractors and subcontractors. It really is, all the employers covered under Title VII. A quick note, I mean, here in Wisconsin, for example, Tim, you know this, that sexual orientation, gender identity have been covered under the Wisconsin employment law, and so there's been a prohibition against discrimination on that basis here for quite a while. And there are other states and cities where there's been coverage, but it's pockets. It hasn't been uniform across the nation until Bostock, where suddenly it is uniform across the country. So, you've got to change that way in that now we have a national standard that we're going to have to look at. And then for federal contractors and subcontractors, this is something that's going to get asked about. As time goes on, we're going to see, I think, more inquiries into this in terms of what are contractors doing to make sure that there's no discrimination here. So that's some of the takeaways from this case, both for all employers and for federal contractors.
And I think you brought up a good point there as far as it, I think, being valuable and being important going forward that it is related to all employers, because I'm sure you experienced this as much as we have here at Local Job Network as far as, an organization 20 years, they haven't been a federal contractor, and then now suddenly they are because they signed that contract and they have all these new sets of regulations to possibly worry about. And at least in this regard specifically, it should be something that they're already at least monitoring and being aware of, whereas in the past it might be again another whole new subject that they have to deal with. So I think it's a positive, obviously, from just the general ruling perspective goes, but then for all of our federal contractors and subcontractors out there, it's something that you'll essentially be already on top of, we hope, and that it's not yet another new piece of the puzzle that I know it can be complicated and challenging to make sure you have all these obligations and requirements taken care of. So, as you said, Bill, there's going to be more conversations. There's probably going to be more decisions as far as, how far-reaching this is and how does it apply to not just only not having discrimination, but you talk about ensuring that you're reaching out to these individuals in some way to make sure that they're representative in your workforce. So I'll be curious to see where it goes. And I know when anything changes, anything happens, Bill Ostendorf will be right on the case.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to stay on top of it. And yeah, and your points, Tim, here are really, really good. It just, in some ways, it makes life simpler for all employers because it's not like all of a sudden, if you become a federal contractor, you have to do this. You have to do this anyway. So I think that this makes life, easier. One last point, real quick before, we leave this for the day. The one issue I think that's really still open, and that they did talk about in this decision, but explicitly said, we're not actually going to give you a lot of guidance here, is the question, what happens for religious institutions, for organizations that for some religious purpose, would say that sexual orientation, gender identity, those are issues for us. We don't know exactly where that piece of things are going to go. And so there's going to be litigation over that in the next number of years. So for religious institutions, if any of you, if any of our three people listening today are part of, some religious institution and you're like, boy, this is going to, be a real adventure for us. The answer to your questions about that is yes, it's going to be a real adventure for you because the court really didn't give you guidance yet. So we'll see. There's going to be more that's going to come up in this. It's not like this issue is going to totally die away or anything, but Bostock really gives us a good roadmap on the most important pieces of this. So this is a very, very huge decision, and like I said, one that I know I didn't expect to come out of court, and certainly not the way that it did with a 6-3 majority that really says, yeah, this isn't going to get overturned anytime soon. This is where the court is on this issue.
Excellent points, Bill. And even again mentioning the 6-3 ruling, it should have an additional impact, not only from the legal side, but even I think from the sort of the logistics side. And I mean that as in logically, because it really did follow more of what is law, what makes sense versus, what is a party line that I should follow or what is my personal feeling on it. That really shouldn't be the case in any of these types of rulings. So I think it's good to see that, regardless of what side you might fall on, that it appears that the court in this case, at least, the ones who voted in favor, certainly were looking at it from a more, what is actually the law here? What is the precedent we should be setting? And now we'll go forward from that. So, Bill, as always, appreciate you, hopping on and talking about this. As you said, just a major topic, and you know, it will be very interesting to see as we move forward. Did you have any last commentaries before we wrap things up?
I don't, right? Because I think that this was a really important decision to talk about because of all the ramifications it has. A little tease for the future, though,
Uh-oh.
Tim. One of these days, we're gonna have to have a podcast where, you know, we do get in some additional OACCP things, including the interesting question, what's Craig Lean's status, and when, or if, is he actually leaving OACCP? So, something for the future.
All right, there's the tease. Bill's just getting better and better at this podcasting thing. So,
I've been working at it, you know.
yeah, you have all that time at home now, nowhere to go, nothing to do. So, just sit in front of the mirror
That's a fact.
and work on your game. That's all I got to do.
Yeah, I every day I look out my dining room window here and I think, what can I do to make this podcast more interesting? So I'm trying to get better, Tim, I swear.
Well, all of our listeners, however many that might be, they do appreciate it, certainly. And we appreciate you being on with us once again. That is Bill Oschendorf, founder and president of HR Analytical Services. Bill, we will talk to you again, hopefully sooner than later.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right, so we will close things up here on this episode of the OFCCP Compliance Podcast. Hope you've enjoyed listening here. You can go to localjobnetwork.com and find a number of our other episodes, as well as other resources you might be looking for when it comes to OFCCP compliance and really anything in the areas of employment. You can also go to HRanalytical.com and find everything that Bill and his organization can offer up for you. While there is some crossover, there's also some things that they do that we can help you with. So make sure you check out both of us and see what fits best for you. So, for everyone here at Local Job Network, I am Tim Yuma. Take care, everybody.